I want to deviate from that to say that throughout our life in the ashram, people used to say, what you do all day? I mean, what you do with Baba? And those that would meet us at birthday time, when Baba would be glowing and sitting on the gadi, and everybody would be sitting around gazing at him, and we would try to take a bit of opportunity also to be able to gaze at him. And I remember a woman one day saying to me, oh, how wonderful it is to sit at the feet of the Master. And I said, yes, yes, very wonderful. But to myself, woman, you don't know the half of it. Because we rarely had the opportunity of sitting like that with Baba. Or if Baba called us, the whole group in the ashram, it was for some purpose of some kind. But I say, we had all sorts of odd jobs to do. For instance, I was really sort of jack of all trades in the ashram. I had to do some carpentry work. I used to have to pack and unpack household things. I used to, like in Rishikesh, be in charge of seeing of the water that was brought outside was carried inside. And fortunately, the monsoon started coming, so we had to leave there, because I think I would have been submerged in the containers of water. I was having to handle so much water. I've even had to do sweeper job for a while. Everything that Bob has given us, he's always given us because he wanted us to forget the self and be adaptable to his every wish. Now, in this respect, I'll read a few instructions which Baba gave us many, many years ago, but which to this day, and for those who follow Baba, are still very apt. The following instructions, if carried out wholeheartedly by you, will make you help my work of spiritualizing the world. They're not to be treated like long-established sermons, read, heard, and forgotten. They are not to be understood in the light of philosophical slogans, preached merely for the sake of preaching. They are simple eternal truths which I want you all to try your utmost to live. Now, Baba gives us 4 points. 1. Amidst all your duties, let the background of all your thoughts be the only thought that God alone is real and all else is illusion. 2. Infuse into each other the idea that the ultimate goal of all life is to know God in his true, infinite aspect. 3. Think less of yourself and more of others by trying to make others happy, even if you have to suffer for it. 4. Learn that resignation to my will means not to complain of your lot. A control of mind means not to be upset by difficulties. That loving all as parts of the same whole means not to hurt feelings of anyone. And so, we've tried, but we've failed so often. Now, we stayed in Hyderabad for quite some months, and then Baba wanted to go back to Merizad. So instead of the 4 women of Baba's group who had been with them in walking through the new life, Baba decided that they should not walk back with him. So they came back to Merizad by car, and Kitty and I came with them. And Baba at that time then came back to Merizad and immediately went up on the hill. And his little cabin was already ready for him up on the hill. And so he proceeded right from there, so that I don't recollect now that we even saw Baba. We may have had a glimpse of him before he went on up the hill.
This was for the Mananash work.
And this is for the Mananash work. Now, Baba didn't stay for very long up on the hill. He decided it was too windy, or whatever work he had done was done in a short time. Baba's ways are Baba's ways. And that cabin was brought down from the hill. In the meantime, I had to go for an operation, so I quickly hurried it so that I would get it over with and be back at Merizad by the time Baba proceeded down the hill. Baba came to know about it, and Baba said to, sent word to me that I should not worry in the least. I never had an operation in my life before, but somewhere on, just because Baba said don't worry, I just didn't. And when the nurse was about to give me the you know, putting me on the operating table, and when she heard I'd never had an operation, she told me not to be nervous, everything's all right. And I said, but I'm not worrying. And I didn't in the least throughout the whole thing. And even when I came out of the anesthesia, I was murmuring Gujarati and telling this young Baba lover who was near me, don't take my Baba ring off my finger. All these things I don't remember. But I mean, it showed that from the time I was under the anesthetic till I came out, I mean, Baba was on my mind. So this was, by the time I came back, Baba was then making plans for going to the West. And so Baba said, well, Ron, if you're going to the West, you better go beforehand and get further diagnosis from doctors in America. Baba said, no, no, what is this? Ronald's perfectly all right. And I said, if Baba says I'm all right, I'm all right. I'm not going to go waste my time with diagnosis. And Baba said, anyway, Ronald has to handle my trip, and I've got to have her there. I said, what do you mean by wanting to send her beforehand? So I said, Baba, I don't want to go. I mean, it's the last thing I want to do, excepting to be with you. So then I had the, as I say, the good fortune of looking after Baba, handling all the tickets and the passports, getting him on and off the plane, and also the Meru, and Gavir were the four that went with us. And Kitty at that time, of course, was also there coming to America. And I remember one of the customs men when we were going through, he said, oh, so you brought all your friends from India, isn't that nice? Now give them a good time. They were all very obliging, because when I wanted to see Baba through, when they had to stamp his passport, I told the official, don't take me with all the Americans. When my friends come, let me come at the last of the Americans, and then, because the foreigners were to come next. Even that was agreed to, and everything went very smoothly. Then Elizabeth and Margaret met us, and we went down to Myrtle Beach, and direct from New York. I was there for a short time, and then Baba gave me permission to see my family, whom I hadn't seen after 15 years. And the only stipulation I asked of Baba was, please, Baba, when I go to New York, no restrictions. So Baba was very kind not to give me any restrictions, and so I was able to have an enjoyable time with my family. When I came back to Myrtle Beach, Baba had quite a few interviews with close Baba people. He'd also had one day of Vadarshan with close Baba people. I was there at the time when Baba gave a public darshan in the barn. And why I remember this so clearly is because Delia de Leon and I had charge of ushering people into Baba. And we would sort of keep them waiting, and then as we were given the signal, we would usher them in. Now, among all the people that had come to see Baba were also the black community, those who had been serving Elizabeth there on the center, and their relatives, and they'd all become drawn to Baba, and naturally they wanted to take Baba's darshan. So their turn came to be ushered into the barn. And what, as I say, impressed me most was that Baba rose from his seat and walked halfway across the barn to greet them, which was an unprecedented thing for Baba to do, because Baba, when all the others came for darshan, sat in that big chair of his, and everyone came and paid their respects to him and then went out. But when the blacks came, Baba came to meet them. And it seems that it was only just a short time after that when the subject of integration came up, and little by little
they began to stand up.
Yes. So I always feel as if sort of Baba was planted the seed at that time when he was giving darshan to them. Now, before we left Myrtle Beach for that fateful trip out across the United States, there were still four people that were very anxious to have Baba's darshan, and those were four young dancers from Margaret Cross Group. They unfortunately had to go on tour to Chicago, and they sent telegrams, frantic telegrams, may we come before you leave and take your darshan. So Baba had sent word, yes. So they had arranged with some rickety aeroplane to come from Chicago to be able to get there in time in Myrtle Beach before Baba left. And what is so interesting is that the whole day prior to their arrival, Baba kept talking about them, kept saying, do you think they'll arrive in time? Do you think that their plane will be all right? Do you think that they'll reach here safely? And all the time, the subject of them came up in Baba's talk with the Mandali, or rather with us, because by that time the Mandali had left. There were only just the women in Sarosh who were there. When they arrived, we realized why Baba had been, as it were, keeping up a steady sort of talk about them, because they went through the most harrowing experience when they'd sort of gotten into some thunderstorm with this plane, and really it's only, might say, Baba's grace which didn't cause this plane to crash. And they reached there safely. They got and met Baba, and Baba gave them an interview there in his cabin. And Delia was present. And Baba, of course, was still using the board, so I had to read the board for Baba. And Delia was weeping, because they were weeping naturally, that feeling of emotion, and at last we have managed to come to Baba. So Baba stops his writing on the board, suddenly looks at Delia and said, what are you weeping about? Well, I mean, the scene was so emotionally charged. I mean, there was all I could do to not weep also, but I thought, my heavens, I have to read the board, and what's Baba going to say? So I managed to sort of keep a grip on myself, and Baba gave them a very nice interview. Was that right? Then, as you all know, we started out to cross the United States. We were really ostensibly on our way to Maremont to stay with Agnes Barron. And our stops were at motels and all that. It was uneventful most of the way in the beginning. We went to see some fascinating caves. I think it was down in Tennessee where they had these stalactites and stalagmites, and it was quite fascinating. And I myself had never seen that part of the United States. And but what happened is that on the way, we were a bit lax in following Baba. In one respect, it was not entirely our fault, because our car was a much slower. It was a station wagon compared to Elizabeth's car. And on the other hand, I suppose we should have been a little more alert. And we were thoroughly reprimanded by Baba that we should always keep on the lookout, especially at certain points where we were supposed to meet Elizabeth's car, so that we would not miss our directions. And so I, of course, had to pipe out at the wrong time and suggest to Baba that as we all knew where we were going, and if we did miss connections, well, they would just keep on going and we would reach that particular place that night and then everything would be all right. But I got nicely annihilated by Baba for even having made such a suggestion. And all of us in the car, that means Sarosh and I were sitting in front, and in the row behind in the station wagon was Gaver and Delia and Kitty. And Baba said that, now you five people must keep alert and all eyes must watch any crossroad we came or any particular point, so that we would not by the slightest mistake miss his car. The Baba was so very sort of emphatic about it that we really felt, oh, I mean, Baba really is serious about this. We better sort of be on the alert. So when we got to started going through the town of Prague, I noticed there was a very lovely little sign saying hospital this way, and I said, what a delightful little town in which to have a hospital here, and making comments like that. And then we went on out the town. And out the town, there was a sort of incline and quite a hill where you climbed. And when we got almost to the top, Sarah says, it seems to be an accident. We saw cars and people all lined up and everything. So I thought, gosh, an accident. And Bobby said, yes, Sarah says, it's Elizabeth's car. Oh, I said, it can't be. He said, what do you mean it can't be? It is. Well, I looked again, and sure enough, I said, oh, my God. Wait, before Sarah even stopped the car, I was rushing out. Because all my mind was, where's Baba? When I got to the car, well, there was poor Elizabeth sort of pinned in on behind the wheel because both her arms were fractured. And she kept saying all the time, take care of the gentleman. So then I looked and I saw that somebody had lifted Baba up on the side of this sort of hill that was there. And there was Mara there, and the women were with Mara. Baba pointed the fact that his arm and his leg were broken, and he was bleeding profusely from the nose. So I got some kerchiefs and things and sort of mopped it up. And then by that time, the ambulance came, and then so many people had to be taken to the hospital that they even brought the hearse, because they only had one ambulance in the town. I went with Baba, Gavir with Baba, and there was also Elizabeth in the ambulance. And we took them there. And later on, Dr. Burleson said he'd never seen so much mud and blood, because where the accident took place, it had rained the night before, which in a way was a fortunate thing, because a few days later when I drove by with Sarosh to go and collect the luggage from the car, the whole ground had gone so hard. But at that time, it was all muddy. And I wanted, naturally, Burleson to immediately look after Baba. But he said no, he had to look after, because Mira had that concussion, that serious gash on her forehead. And so I sort of kind of stayed with Baba till Burleson came and looked after him.
And Baba was conscious all this time?
Baba was conscious. And the most beautiful miracle is that even Mara, throughout all this concussion, was conscious. And when the specialists came from Oklahoma City to see Mara and take x-rays of her head, I mean, they couldn't believe what they saw. It was a state of these tiny, tiny cracks and fractures that she had. I mean, anybody else wouldn't have survived from that. And so Baba's leg was set, because it was down here at the ankle, that part there. And the arm was also adjusted, but Baba only had to keep that in a sling. He didn't have one of that elastic sort of sling. He didn't have to have it in a cast. But then he had this, his nose and the other part of his mouth here were injured. And that's why later on, both accidents, Baba had his nose, so that's why it became sort of flattened down at the tip. I mean, Baba anyway had a sort of biggish nose, but it was all in keeping with his face. But later on, it became more bent, and that was due to the accidents. So we were there in Prague. As I say, we practically took over the hospital. There were a few other patients there, but we just camped there. And Baba sent for Margaret Krask, and he also sent for Ivy Deuce and Charmin. And by that time, as soon as the accident happened, Sarah sent the cables off to the telegram to Ojai, so that Mundley just barely arrived there and turned around and came back again. So about a day or so after the accident had happened, they managed to get back. And poor Sarosh, I mean, he felt so much, even though he wasn't driving the car, but being the only one of the men Mundley there, he kept feeling the responsibility of, what will the others say to me that this has happened to Baba? But we kept saying, but Sarosh, it's not your fault. I mean, this is something everybody Baba wanted to have happen. And it happened, but you're not responsible for it. But still, he felt so much about it. But he managed to send all the word to India and everywhere, so all the people that should be informed. So that first night, Gaver and Sarish and I stayed with Baba until the Mandali came. Then after that, Baba divided up the sort of watch duty. And then Nilu, Dr. Nilu and I, used to be doing night duty there from 7 o'clock in the evening till 7 o'clock in the morning. And we weren't allowed to even nod. So after a while, I filled myself with so many of these pills to keep awake that by the time the 10 days over, I was just shaking. And of course, having so many pills at night, when I had to go off duty at 7 in the morning, well, I just couldn't go to sleep. I used to get about 1 hour of sleep in the day. And I didn't dare come back in the daytime to the hospital to see how Baba was getting on, because I knew that Baba would be annoyed and say, "What are you doing here? You're up at night, and so you're supposed to be resting." So I didn't show my face in the daytime and would come sharply at 7 in the evening and leave in the morning when the others would come, the Mandali. So this lasted for about 10 days. Then Baba sent Duncan and me back to Myrtle Beach to prepare for his coming there. And instead of staying at the center, it was decided that we, that is the women and Baba, that is all those who were injured, should be under one roof. So the best would be to be staying at Yupon Dunes, which was Elizabeth's home there in Myrtle Beach.
What was Baba's attitude at the time? I mean, was he gesturing, or, I mean, he had that swing and so on?
Oh, yes, the Baba would naturally always gesture, but, I mean, I got so upset one night, you see, naturally, the reaction and all that. I think I wept all that first night when I was trying not to let Baba hear this, that I was that it just like this, you know, and using tissues by the dozen. And then the next morning, Baba just looked at me and laughed. So I said, "Why are you going through all this, you know? I mean, this is nonsense." And I felt so badly. But I mean, the shock, because, I mean, none of us ever sort of imagined that, I mean, accident, yes, but even as Money said, well, I mean, Baba's in the car, so nothing can happen. That's the sort of feeling you'd have here with Baba, nothing can happen. But Baba just meant it to happen, because the person whose car they had the collision with was a young amputee who was driving one of these newfangled cars with the sort of driving equipment for an amputee, and evidently he was a bit new at it. And he and the girl that was with him, that car was hardly damaged, and they weren't hurt at all. They didn't even have a scratch. And yet Baba had to be hurt like that, and the others had to share in it, even Mera. Money got the least, but she had sort of suffered from shock, and she got a bad jolt on her leg, which sort of, she was limping around about a bit with the knee. Meru was laid up with fractures and a cut on her head also. And then, of course, Elizabeth had fracture in both arms, and she kept complaining of pain, and at last they took more x-rays and found that she'd also cracked some ribs. So all the patients were in Yupon Dunes so that the doctor could come and take care of them and see them. And when this happened was in May. I think at the beginning of July, or middle of July, we went up to New York. That other whole time we stayed. Bob also went to, what's the name of that hospital that's not far from there, from Myrtle Beach, where the tobacco people, I can't remember now. Baba went there and they took x-rays and put a new cast on and everything and found that the leg was healing very well. I mean, the Burleson had made a perfect set on it.
What was Burleson's reaction to all this? I mean, he must have been overtaken to have something like
that. He was. But then he realized that, well, Baba must be somebody very unusual to have so much devotion from so many people. And gradually he was sort of drawn to Baba. That not in the sense that Baba lovers are, but somehow he had great respect for Baba. And he found himself doing all these things. He just probably didn't know why he was doing it. But he gave all of them the most expert care, and he called in outside opinion also from Oklahoma City and everything. But he had a beautifully equipped little air-conditioned hospital with all the latest equipment and everything. So it was really quite perfect.
Did Bob ever say anything about Dr. Burleson, about whether he was fortunate or, I mean, it had to happen here or anything?
Well, he may have at the time, but I myself don't remember, because as I say, if any of that took place during the time when Bob was in the hospital, then I was only there at night, and the daytime I wasn't there when Bob went be talking with the others and doing that. But he probably, I mean, considering that Burleson had to look after him, of course, he must have been fortunate. And money still, every year, she gets a letter at Christmas time from Burleson's wife. She gives money the news of how they all are there and everything. Though I believe in recent years he's had rather a hard time of it and had had some amputation, you know. But still, even you do something for the master, that doesn't always mean that your life's going to be a bed of roses afterwards. So many times people have discovered that after coming to Baba, everything goes wrong. And then it's only just because it's their love for Baba that makes them stick to Baba. Because usually you would expect that, well, I've given my love to Baba, I've given my life to Baba, so now Bob will take care of everything, everything's going to be just roses. But if you have to go through a certain unhappiness or disasters of any kind, I mean, Baba doesn't mitigate these things in the sense of that because you've come to him, this won't happen. It is something you're destined to go through, but because you've had that contact with Baba, there is a softening of the situation that makes it possible for you to see it through, which on your own you probably couldn't have. That's the way I see it. So, as I said, we went up to New York. Well, Baba didn't want to stay in New York City. So through Phyllis, we stayed in a bungalow out in Scarsdale that belonged to a Mrs. Ferris. And at that time, Charmin Deuce was taking the women for sightseeing. And Kitty and I used to stay at home with Baba if he wanted anything. And there was always one or two of the Mundley that were there on to hand, though Baba had allowed Mayor G and Sarosh and some of the others to be in New York and attend to whatever they wanted to at the time. But Baba didn't let Kitty or me go out at all. We stayed there completely. Now, there I had an experience which again jacked me up to how difficult it is to always obey Baba and to remember to obey him at the right time. There was a woman cooking for us who had been Elizabeth's cook when Elizabeth had a house in New York. She was part American Indian and part black, but her skin was very light in color. And she was an extremely good cook, but rather temperamental. And somehow or other, I seemed to have rubbed her up the wrong way for some unknown reason. And one day, some little thing that I did, she took objection to and started making a big to-do out of it, which completely floored me because, I mean, it was so unexpected and so unwarranted. And because of that, and when I see something that's done like that without justification, I mean, it irks me. So I, of course, was sizzling inside about it. And I just, in the end, just walked away from the whole situation. It was the only thing to do. But I was still very annoyed about everything that happened. And as usual, everything comes to Baba's ears. Baba said, what is this, what happened, and why? So when Baba asked you something like that, you can't gloss over it, you have to tell him. So I told him exactly what had happened. But at the same time, I myself had not calmed down yet about it. This was absolutely unwarranted, the whole thing. And when I completed my narration of what happened to Baba, Baba spelled on the board, go and apologize to her. So when I heard apologize, he said, well, I said, if anybody should be apologizing, it's And I heard myself and stopped in midair. I said, I'll go and apologize, Baba. Baba said, no. Now your apology has no meaning whatsoever. If you had gone immediately when I said to you, go and apologize, there would have been some meaning to it. Now your apology like this is meaningless. And then, of course, the expression in Baba's eyes of disappointment, again, you've, you know, fallen down, that was more severe even than the fact that, you know, that I had not followed through as I should have. But I heard myself, but just too late, in the mid-sentence, I realized what I had done. So I said, oh, Rana, will you ever learn? So that's one incident that happened to me on the journey. Then when we went to England, many incidents seemed to happen where I seemed to somehow or other always be doing the wrong thing. Whether it's because my nerves were still sort of a bit on edge from this reaction of what had happened to Baba, that's probably part of it, because I know when anybody used to say anything to me, you know, I just sort of growl instead of, you know, being sweet and pleasant. But that has always been a characteristic of mine in those early days. When I wanted to hide anything, how I felt, I would always do it by being aggressive so as to cover up. So that's what I was at that time. But somehow or other, whatever Baba asked me to do, sometimes I would do it with, I thought was doing the right thing, but somehow or other, it wasn't right. I remember even one time Baba left word that I should wake him at a certain hour, and I woke him up an hour too early. And all sorts of idiotic things that happened. And so at last I got frantic. I said to Baba, Baba, we're not very far from America. This is England. And if everything I do is wrong, and you're not pleased with anything, then what is the point of my going back to India with you? It's much better if you send me back to America. I wasn't going to leave Baba, but I was putting it up to Baba that, I mean, what is the point of having somebody around that is such a hopeless and a person that every time they do anything, you're dissatisfied and so forth. Baba gave me the brush off, you see, sort of, what's this nonsense you're talking? This only happened on occasions, but still. And in between, of course, we had a beautiful time with Baba, because when Baba one time was giving darshan, we went sightseeing. And then Delia arranged, because Mare and Mani had not seen some different plays in America, that we would see them in London. One time we went to a rodeo, another time we went to the ice show, and a number of plays. And what made me happy was that because Baba had to be with the Mandalay, that is, actually not the Mandalay, he went with Nilu and Dr. Duncan. So the women would be sitting separately with Charmin and Delia. And for, I still don't know why, but Baba always had me come with him and Nilu and Duncan. So each time we went to the plays, and I also had the pleasure of being there with Baba, so that made up for all these other little things that seemed to be going wrong all the time. And when we got to Switzerland again, the same thing happened. I happened to, before, was something somebody said that was funny one day, and Baba was at that time having a massage, and I was called in and raked off by Baba for being so lighthearted at the time, and here was Baba suffering, and I mean, it was, I couldn't help it, somebody said this something funny, and just spontaneously I laughed. So then I was very upset about Baba, and different things happened. Again, I said to Baba, well, Baba, if we're only in Switzerland, if you want to send me back, can't stand the sight of my face, everything I do is wrong. Absolutely, it seems foolish my coming to India. You don't want somebody around that you don't like the sight of. Again, Baba just brushed me off at this. What's this rubbish you're talking, you see? So that's how things went on. Now, a very amusing incident occurred while we were there in Switzerland. There was a young nephew of Irin Billow's that she brought. She thought Baba would like him to do night duty, and it was also take the pressure off Nilu, who was continually doing night duty for Baba during all that period. And so Baba said yes. He seemed a nice, bright young boy. So Gavi used to be looking after Mera, and so my job was to be alert in the morning, and when Baba rang the bell, inquire what Baba wanted, and then later on see, is Mera up yet, and then she would come and Baba would wash his face and all. So this particular morning, I mean every morning I got up early, so did Yain, but she had to see about the breakfast and all that. We roomed together just within hearing of Baba's room. This particular morning it was still dark. Baba rang the bell, I was still in bed. I said, good heavens, what's happened? Baba said, what? Because naturally I had no time to dress when Baba rang the bell, you have to come immediately. So I was still in my pajamas. Baba said, what's the matter? You're not dressed, you're not up. Look at the clock, look at the time. I looked at the clock. I said, but Baba, this clock's a whole hour ahead of time. I said, it's only 5 o'clock, it isn't 6 o'clock. So I went back to my room and I brought my watch and I showed it to Baba and I said, look, Baba, there's a whole hour's difference in time. And I said, I can't understand it, because I said, every evening before I leave your room, I come and look to see and check that your clock is the same as my watch, so that in case your clock went fast or mine went slow or something. I said, the clocks were identical last night when I looked. So nothing more was said very much about it. And some days later, I set the clock right again. Some days later, the same thing happened again. And Baba was very annoyed. He said, what is this? So I said, Baba, there's something very strange. I said, nobody's clock goes an hour fast in the night. And I said, it might go 5 minutes or 10 minutes, but not an hour. And especially when I check so that there's no, that it wasn't a case of in the daytime it might have gone fast and all that. Then I suddenly started thinking. And I said, that young boy, I said, he probably with all his heart is wanting to do for Baba, but probably towards morning he started getting sleepy. And so he probably, because he was supposed to go at 5 o'clock or something like that, and he probably just set the clock an hour ahead and went back home to bed. So I don't know whether Baba ever asked him or not, but that's the only solution that I could figure out as to why, like that, two odd times, well, not consecutive, two odd times the clock should suddenly go an hour fast overnight. But I think it tickled Baba, and I don't think he said anything to him. I mean, he was still just a kid at the time. And he probably just got too tired sitting there towards early morning. I mean, it gets, if you've been there hours on end, it's pretty difficult for a youngster to stay awake like that. So that was an amusing episode, I thought, in while we were there in Switzerland. And then, of course, I told you how I got the seats for Baba to get back after the airstrike in Geneva. So Baba then got back to India, and we came here to Merizad. And while we were in England, Baba had the cast removed from his leg by a very fine doctor in London. So when Baba traveled after that, he had just that bandage tied around his leg. And we were some, I suppose, these periods are rather vague in my mind, but we were, I think, some months here in Merizad. Then Baba went down on a tour of Andhra. And then I know later on we went up to Dehradun in the north, and we were there for some months, went up to Mussoorie, which were up in the mountains during that hot weather, came down again. It was in Dehradun which Baba procured Shiva when she was just a young colt, and then had her brought to Mahamaleshwar. We stayed in Mahamaleshwar for a while, and then After Mahameshwar, we came to Satara. Satara, we were there in 1954, I think. I don't think we got there sooner. And that was the year that Baba had the Savas program in Mehrabad. So for the weeks that Baba had the Savas program in Mehrabad, we came from Satara, stayed here at Mehrabad. Baba used to every day go to Mehrabad. And at that time, he had some 15 or more Westerners. No women, only men. And they occupied all the upstairs on the hill there at Mehrabad. It was sort of big dormitory was made for them. And what is the museum room now is a sitting room for them. And under the shed was their dining room. And a couple of times, Baba had me come there to see them. And that is the first time that anybody besides Mera had seen that 10 circles chart after it had been painted. Before that, not even the Baba's Mandali had seen it. When I finished it, Baba showed it one day to Mera. Then when I had went to see the Westerners, by Baba's order, he had sent me there to see them. Then he told me at the time to show them the 10 circles chart. And then also, we all from Merazad one day went, when Baba gave the big darshan at Wadia Park. Because at that time, we so had so little opportunity to see Baba giving a darshan. So it was really quite, this was on such a big scale that we enjoyed seeing it very much. Then, 55, then again we went back to Satara. Then again we came to Mehrazad, and Baba used to go every day when he had that 1955 darshan. At that time, Francis Brabazon came from Australia to be here at that time, and Don Stevens. And that's when they wrote their two different accounts. Francis afterwards wrote his Stay with God, and Don wrote his Listen to Humanity. Then 1956, Baba decided to go to the West again, just taking the Mandali with him. We all stayed in Satara. And it was just about that time before Baba was to go to the West that this seed had been sort of planted in my mind about the God Speaks chart. So I asked Baba's permission to do it, and Baba said, yes, I could, because this was a good opportunity when Baba wasn't there to be able to work on the chart, because when Baba's there, naturally one's called at all times. And that's one of the reasons why unless Baba gave me some particular specific work to do, I didn't draw, because I couldn't keep my ideas when I was having to do other things. So this was an opportunity to work on the God Speaks chart. So, as I say, Baba gave me permission. So I told Baba, I said, I think I can work out the idea of the evolution and reincarnation, but I really don't know what happens when it starts with the involution and you get on the planes. So Baba looked at me and said, oh, well, you just work it out the best you can. So, as you've seen from the chart, that was the result of how I worked it out. And when Baba came back, I had all the sketches ready for him, the rough sketches, and a huge rough outline of the arrangement of the chart. Then when I wished to work on it, Baba, we used to be striding up and down in the veranda for a walk, and it was sort of like his old way of walking, because after the first accident, Baba's ankle healed perfectly, so that it didn't in any way affect his walking. And so Baba used to walk up and down on this long veranda that we had for exercise, and then one day he started taking interest in what I was doing and the colors that I was putting in. And so each day after that, then he used to stop and watch to see how the progress had taken place. And then when I'd finished all the painting, then Baba gave me all the wording for the God Speaks chart. Then, of course, there was the accident in the beginning of December. I think it was the 2nd of December when Baba had the second accident. And that is still a mystery, excepting the very fact that Baba had to spill, as he said, his blood in America, and he had to spill his blood in India. Because there was no traffic on the road, there was no obstruction in the road, as far as the story I understand of what happened. And just the wheel went out of control suddenly, and the car went turtle. And Nilu was killed instantly, I believe. And the only person that had just slight scratches was Vishnu. And Vishnu tells the story of how when he went, because Baba had changed seats with Nilu and had been sitting in the back, and he went and sat in front. But Baba had his foot up on the dashboard, and that's how he got that jolt in his hip. And when Vishnu scrambled out of the car to see is Baba all right or what had happened, he said he just saw Baba in a great light with a triumphant expression on Baba's face. He said he was so dazzled for a moment that he just stood there. And of course, as you know, Pendu was injured, Erich was injured. And because...
What was the scene, though, when Baba came back in the car? He came back to the...
So what happened? You see, Baba had gone for this cricket match. And Baba usually came fairly early, say 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening, at the latest. So, say earlier than that, say 4 or 5 in the afternoon. So when it got later than that, we all went under the impression that, oh, Baba must have been enjoying his day very much, that he's late today. So we had no thought of worry about it or anything like that. But suddenly we hear a car in the driveway. But it's not Baba's car. Who can it be? So we see this car with a man driving, and all we see is Vishnu and Baba. And Baba again, all the smears of blood on him. We said, oh, this is terrible. Oh, God, what's happened? You see, Vishnu tried to sort of explain, you see, quickly, but we have to do something. We must get Baba into the house and all that. Well, I just didn't have the strength to get on a cycle and go down to the Mandali's house, which is...